Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza. I'm an allied healthcare professional that has worked in the industry for over 25 years, with the majority of my practice being in the private physical therapy space and in public school athletics. My curiosity prompted me to create Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast to discuss the ever-changing landscape in the healthcare industry, focusing on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we will discuss the barriers that healthcare professionals face and how we as individuals can collaborate to make the listener better understand the industry for a better patient and athlete experience. Now, on to the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. This week, I'd like to welcome Anthony Cerundolo. Anthony is the assistant athletic trainer for the Boston Red Sox. Anthony is the former assistant athletic director and director of sports medicine for the College of the Holy Cross, where he served from 1998 to 2020. And he was the head athletic trainer and head football athletic trainer, as well as the rehab coordinator and the member of the senior athletic staff. As the director of sports medicine, he developed a sports medicine staff from only four athletic trainers to nine full-time athletic trainers at the end of his tenure. In addition to his service at the College of the Holy Cross, Anthony was an assistant athletic trainer for Harvard University from 1994 to 1998, and he also served as an athletic trainer for the Boston Blazers indoor lacrosse teams, as well as USA Pro-Am ice hockey teams. In our discussion, we talk about our history and how we became to know each other and the importance of building relationships in the athletic training field. We then talk about Anthony's passion for helping people and his journey in the field of athletic training. We then touch on the day-to-day responsibilities of a collegiate athletic trainer and the challenges of working in professional baseball. We then discuss the role of sports science and rehabilitation and the importance of communication and collaboration amongst the medical staffs. In closing, we then discuss the importance of sleep science and the recovery of athlete performance. Now, on to the show.
On this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, I'd like to welcome Anthony Cerundolo, assistant athletic trainer for the Boston Red Sox. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me today.
So, a little history, Anthony. I think I met you almost 30 years ago when I was an intern at Harvard. You were probably just out of school. I think you were probably out a few years, but that's kind of where we started our relationship. And I learned a good amount from you guys over at Harvard, which was stayed with me through my years practicing as an athletic trainer. So. Thanks for getting the ball rolling and keeping me interested in athletic training.
Yeah, it's amazing how much time has passed, and I can't believe it's been that long. But those are still great memories for me. Still keep in touch with some of those staff members, you know, especially with Mo and Gary and Moore McCarthy, and just great people, special people, obviously, and still part of my athletic training family and obviously very close friends today.
Yeah, that's great. I think we had, you know, some fun times there. I got to really see what college athletic training was all about, especially Mo walking around, hiking his shorts up and making fun of people, which you really can't do anymore. But it was awesome. And then we look back to those days, and it was definitely a fun time where we really got to see what it was like. And obviously, I've had some relationships with people that were at Harvard that I had met after that, which have, you know, been in the community that I work in now. So it was nice to kind of, you know, rekindle some of those relationships and see how they've been doing over the years. So, again, welcome. What kind of drove you, one, into athletic training, right? And what was that passion for you as you went through school and became a professional?
It's amazing. This question was just asked just the other day, just ironically, by one of my players. And since I was a kid, since probably I'm going to say probably like first grade or so. And I maybe the fact that, you know, at the time, I just wanted to be a doctor. I don't know. Like that was like my passion. I just wanted to help people. And it is always my goal. And then obviously get into athletics, playing sports. I love the fact of trying to get, you know, the players back on the field. So that kind of like channeled me more into the athletic training aspect and got me going in that direction. And, you know, obviously being at, you know, I went to Northeastern because they have one of the better programs here in the New England area in Boston. You know, as you know, I'm a local guy. And ironically, ended up being in the area because I had from Northeastern, ended up going to BU to get my master's. And we'll talk a little more, you know, my path. But really the passion here was just really being involved with athletics. I just like the fact that these young kids that are, you know, inspiring, you know, obviously getting a high education, but also, you know, competing at a high level. And that really got me, you know, motivated. It kind of keeps me young too. You know, you're around these guys and, you know, as you know, I know you're in the high school setting, but you have experience also the collegiate and clinical setting for that matter. You know, we have an impact on people. And I think that's the big picture and we can't lose. And, you know, how, you know, you build those relationships, first of all, you know, trying to build those trusts and some of these guys are still in gals too, for that matter. You know, still friends today, you know what I mean? We stay connected. And obviously if there's any type of like, you know, reunion type thing and I'm invited to, obviously now that I'm out of the collegiate part, but, there's still communication and some text messages, you know, obviously with social media now, there's always some type of, you know, connection with, some of these players still.
Yeah. Well, I have to attest, you look the same and I think you have the same amount of body fat. You still it's around the gym, so I'm trying to keep up, but it's kind of tough.
Well, it's as you know, it's been a passion of mine, and I think that's part of it too. I always feel that you have to, if you're going to preach it, you know, we got to live it, and I try to exemplify that, and trying to, you know, promote a good health too, and that's part of getting these guys back. You know, is all about the whole recovery, and the big piece is obviously nutrition and recovery. And as you and I had this discussion a little while ago prior to this, and how important it is, and how things have evolved or evolving for that matter, mm-hmm. and how things are trending now. You know, with sports science.
Yeah, 100%. What can you kind of outline the day? You know, day in the life of a collegiate athlete trainer, and you being a director of sports medicine at Holy Cross, and what it now looks like as an athlete trainer working in professional baseball.
Yeah, I, you know, being at Harvard, you know, like I said, it was very special. I was fortunate, you know, when I left BU, you know, really going from no job, and it was a great opportunity. Ironically, one of the staff members there ended up leaving to go to the Boston Red Sox. So I ended up going there as an interim athletic trainer. And, you know, at that time, I went there and built that relationship. And, you know, back, you know, God rest her soul, Maria Hudzik at BU called me up to come. She wanted me to come back to BU because Paul Lasard left to go to Holy Cross. You know, now here comes this crazy triangle.
Right.
And then Paul Lasard landed at Holy Cross College and called me up and offered me to come there to be his assistant. So I went from no jobs to three offers, you know, in a matter of like a month or so.
Yeah.
And, you know, I stayed at Harvard just because it was a new system, meeting new people. And I just felt this may be a great opportunity just to see how things are run and, you know, and, just see how they structure things. And I can't say enough, you know, how much I've learned there. And because that was kind of my stepping stone and that was my carryover that I kind of brought some of that model to Holy Cross. And then when I landed at Holy Cross, obviously, it was very challenging without question. You know, it was myself, another full time and two interns, which, you know, just freshly graduated out of college. You know, they were certified athletic trainers, but, you know, obviously, as you know, they're just young guns coming out of school. So there's a big, you know, learning curve there. And as things evolved, you know, we just had quite a bit, you know, at Holy Cross, you know, there's approximately almost 3,000 students, around 2,800. And we had 27 sports and 730, 750 athletes, you know, it was a third of the population. So very, very challenging. As things evolved, we, you know, we started adding more staff members and it took some time. But obviously from my standpoint, you know, extremely busy because I oversaw football, in men's basketball. And then I will pitch in where I could pitch in to help out with other sports. But as you know, football goes from, you know, it's fall sport and then, you know, to winter training. And then obviously it's a spring football. So there's always that constant, overlapping, you know, and trying to maintain, you know, the basketball, men's program. But, you know, we managed best we could. And like I said, you know, then my roles changed as things developed and grew. And, you know, eventually, you know, I became an associate AD there, which, you know, that really propelled things in the sense of me being on a board, being on the committee in front of other associates, just more having a voice at the table. And, you know, in regards to sports medicine and in regard to the medical coverage for the sports teams. And then also, you know, other committees in the college, too, that I was involved, you know, which was CAPA, which is the College on Alcohol and Behavior. So they will meet once every other week or so. It's just a discussion, you know, what are the new things, or what are things that we can encourage these kids, you know, to kind of prevent, or, you know, just to, or, you know, to really encourage them, or, you know, more from a knowledge standpoint, from a drinking standpoint, you know, and what are the things we can do to have a better atmosphere or campus, a safe campus. Mm-hmm. And obviously I was a representative, one of the representatives from the athletic department on that committee. And then a very important part too, which I'll get a little bit here too, is the care team, which was really the big piece with from a mental health standpoint and other disciplinary issues with our students, our student athletes for that matter. That was a big to-do, and so I was also a voice on that committee. Mm-hmm. But my day-to-day, obviously, you know, it became, you know, some administrative, but the big piece that I never want to let go, because was really my relationship with our student athletes. And my primary, you know, my job and my job description is really being an athletic trainer, being present, you know, and being there for them, you know. And I love the hands-on part of it. You know, especially the rehab standpoint, and getting these guys back, you know, on the playing field. You know, and I was always the extra set of eyes and hands for my staff if they had questions, and trying to make available time too, you know, when I could or when I can, unless it was a critical situation, mm-hmm. You know, to step in. But, overall very busy, as you can imagine. You know, I do miss it. I do. And I'm sure you probably can attest to that too. This is just a special thing about, you know, at the college setting, you know, these young, you know, men and women that are, you know, at a high level academic institution and playing at a high level collegiate sports, you know, and so they're very competitive. You know, they're pretty knowledgeable students, and I miss that piece of it. And sometimes you don't think of that, you know, they have that influence on them. You know what I mean? And, you know, like I said earlier, it's just, you know, I have students that have graduated and some have married, you know, our guys, some have married some other student athletes, and I've known them both, and they've invited me to their weddings and stuff. And, you know, if I can make it, I try to make it. And if I can't, it's a little upsetting, you know, because obviously I want to be part of that too. But that's very special and heartfelt. Yeah, those are the things that, like, I kind of miss. And, like, I miss, like, the Hall of Fame type of dinners. You kind of see the older athletes that have graduated and now being inducted to the Hall of Fame and those type of things. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty neat,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and then, yeah.
You get, you know, you talk about you know, students have come through in the years, and I, you know, if you know when you're getting old, when there's kids that I've had in the high school setting that they've gotten married, had kids, moved back to the community, now their kids are in the public school system, and I'm like, Jesus, like, you know, you're looking like, and they say to you, you haven't changed, you look the exact same as you did, you know, 25, 30 years ago,
right?
Like,
right,
you know, it's crazy, but it's interesting that they still call you for advice. You know, I would get kids that have gone out of college as athletes and it would call me for advice. And I said, why don't you go see your athletic trainer? And I think the rapport just isn't there like it was when they were, you know, coming through high school until they, you know, really yeah. built that relationship. So it is, I think that's important to have that throughout all their athletic careers. And that, again, right. like you had mentioned, like moving up to the professional level, you know, there's still that ability for you to gain that respect and those relationships with those athletes that will probably live on for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, the difference, I think, is you do when you need to. You need to build that, you know, trust once again, right? Now it's a business. That's the difference, you know. And some of these players come and go, you know, especially in baseball, it's just a different animal because they have a system, right? They'll have, you know, obviously, the major league team. Then they'll have the triple A team, the double A team, single A, and so on. So these guys move from level to level. But majority is, between us and the Woo Sox here in Worcester. So you do get to know them, you know, and some that are, you know, long contract guys, those are the guys you probably have a little better relationship or a little more tied to them. But, overall, you know, there's still that line, you know, but they have fun. You got to remember they're young guys too. You know, some of these guys are, you know, anywhere from 18, 19, majority of lower 20, you know, in the 20s, you know, and the older ones would be like mid 30s, and we call them old, right?
Yeah.
But in the baseball world, that's old. Yeah, it's old. But overall, they keep it real. You know, there's, you know, the athlete training room is a pretty fun atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But obviously, there's times where, you know, there are times you just have to focus in and hone in and you need to get a guy back, in a safe manner as well.
Yeah.
You know, well,
what is your day, you know, pre-practice game prep, what's kind of your responsibility as far as rehab, game preparation? Because you guys have a lot of staff, you know, you have athlete trainers, sports scientists, physical therapists, massage therapists, nutritionists. Like, where does your responsibility lie within the players that you're dealing with?
Yeah, we all kind of share the players, but you know, some players like to gravitate to, you know, their own athletic trainer, if you want to say that. Mm-hmm. But I've seen players that my staff have seen, or they've seen my players, you know. A majority that you do build a little bit more of a relationship with someone, and they like the, just basically it's really the consistency what they're getting. But to your point, we probably have one of the largest medical staffs in the MLB. There's 5 athletic trainers, and 2 massage therapists and a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. So the piece here that's really changed, and which I miss a lot too, is the rehab piece or the surgical cases. Mm-hmm. So those get channeled a little different now just because you do have the physical therapist on board, or if there's a long term, it gets sent down to Florida. Mm-hmm. So some of those cases go to our JetBlue facility, which is fully staffed down there, mm-hmm. Which kind of stays pretty busy because you're also dealing with other players from the other organizations the other teams within the organization. Mm-hmm. So I do see some of that, but not like where I had, you know, my autonomy with what I had at Holy Cross, where seeing from the acute stages and just really take the whole case through and into return, you know. And that's hard because you're going to remember because our games, we have, you know, baseball is 162 games. And, you know, when you're in season, you're going, you know, when you get there, you know, you get there, you change, have a quick lunch or whatever it may be. And then guys are rolling in, you know, either seeing you or getting ready to get activated with strength and conditioning. And then the afternoon is everything's planned out. Everything's on a schedule. They'll go out and do some field work, and then they'll do some BP, and then back in, they'll change, shower, whatever they need to do, and grab some food and get ready. You know, it's a pregame meal, another little quick prep work if they need it. So a lot of it gets done beforehand. And then it's game time, you know, and then all hands on deck. The way we do it there, we'll do, because if we have a large staff and there's a lot of, you know, there's rules in place too with the MLB, we're only allowed 2 medical staff within the dugout. So it's either myself or someone else covering the first five and a half innings. And then two other staff members come down, replace myself and my other staff that's worked the first. Okay. Or the other way around. We flip. That's the way we kind of run things. The nice feature too is that, you know, because of having a large staff, we also do a little bit of a rotation where we, you know, can leave early. So for example, yesterday was my turn, just so happens to be. So once you get there and you still do your work, and then once the game starts, you know, you basically dismissed, but you can leave. And so it gives you a little time at home, you know.
Which is nice. You're traveling as much as you're traveling.
On travel is totally different. You know, you're on the road. There's nowhere to go, really, right? You're at the hotel. So we do have off days that do fall on the road. Today's an off day. That's why we're doing this. Yeah, right. We have a little more time. But on the off days and on the road, it's, you know, the discretionary, you know, you could do what you want to do. But sometimes, you know, if you may have a player that might be going, like a pitcher or maybe a positional player needs a little extra work, then they set some time to go to the ballpark. You know, it's just a few hours. It's not the full day, which is nice. So if it happens, it happens. And it does happen. Not frequent, but it does happen, especially with the pitching situation, just because their rotation. Yeah. So they just stay on point.
Okay. How does the staff work together? I know there can be some friction with staffs, depending, you know, even in PT practices. I mean, how do you guys work together, ATs, PTs, sports scientists, you know, the medical staff together? How do you guys all, you know, how do you maintain a cohesive unit, and how do you work together in, you know, the communication piece of the, you know, the total athlete and what you're trying to do for the athlete?
Yeah, I think like anything, right? I always say it's either work at home or wherever it may be, communication, right? Communication is our number one priority. You know, we meet, we always meet at a new homestand. For example, when the Cubs just came in, was it Friday? Because, you know, it was our travel. So it was that next day, it was the new series, just to review everyone. So what we'll do is review all our pitching staff first, all our pitchers for that matter, and then relief pitchers. And then we go into positional players. And in that meeting there, it's our medical staff, our strength and conditioning staff, and our sports science. Mm-hmm. So that's where we basically would discuss a player. And if anything needs to go a little more in depth, sometimes that'll be taken to the side, not to prolong the meeting, because we have to go through all the players that are on the list. But the communication line is very open. Our sports science, especially, they, you know, there's a lot of markers, a lot of numbers and that they're looking at. On these players, and a lot determines, you know, how much a individual is working, how many reps they're getting. So they're looking at those type of numbers too. You know, from the pitching standpoint, there's a lot of markers they're looking at too. We gauge, you know, we do a lot of shoulder programming with those guys. And now we do a lot of testing, with Vault, which is, you know, one of these, you know, instruments that track. Right now we do a lot of with internal external rotation, just to see where they're at in their hand grip. We know we're measuring that approximately like twice a week, on each individual, sometimes once, depending, because it is a pretty stressful, but they are exerting a lot of force when we're doing these measurements, and we're only doing like two reps, but we don't like to overstress their shoulder because they're going through a lot as it is. But it does give us numbers, you know, if they're declining or increasing in strength, you know.
Now,
yeah, but we work very, very well together. There's always that open line of communication. And sometimes, you know, if it, you know, I think we all have our own way to look at or treat an injury. Yeah. And if that's the case, like I don't hold back. And, you know, if I see something and I feel we can contribute, I'll mention it in a meeting and say, maybe let's try doing something like this or this, you know, just make that recommendation and just to see, you know, if they're open to that.
Yeah. And it's interesting. The sports science piece has been something that's, you know, somewhat new. And I think that's one of the things I wanted to touch upon is, you know, how much validity does that have, or not validity, but how much weight does that hold when you're rehabilitating an athlete or bringing him back from being injured, where there's a lot of us that have been around for a long time and we never really relied on sports science until recently.
Yes.
you know, like you said, like there might be something you see like, hey, I've seen this before and I didn't need to look at the data to be able to understand what this athlete's going through. Is that just the tool in the toolbox to make sure you guys are doing everything correct for these athletes? Because they're basically multi-million dollar employees of the organization, right? But you also want to be looking out for the best interest of the athlete. So how does that kind of play into what you guys are doing every day?
No, no question. You hit the nail on the head. You know, these are multi-million dollar players, you know, majority. That's the big change. And like I said earlier to you, you know, now, you know, this game, especially with baseball, and I know they do it in other sports too, but I think especially with baseball, you know, it's a lot of analytics, you know, they're looking at everything. And there's some pieces that, you know, that we don't get so much involved with, but, you know, but they're looking at, I mean, we're aware of it, or it gets brought up. I should, you know, rephrase that. So now, you know, as you're hearing more and more about these guys, you know, just, you know, with baseball, these guys with these UCL injuries and some now, you know, the big trend right now is, or things are trending with a little bit of lat and Terry's major injuries. You know, we also think, you know, this whole drive line with these guys, you know, to teach them how to, you know, throw as fast as you can, as hard as you can. You know, it's the same thing with swinging. Swing is, you know, as fast as you can, as hard as you can, you know, when it's that whole control and that deceleration. And also pitching, you know, a lot they look at the arm slot, you know, where they are. And then, you know, now that, you know, now the new pitchers, you know, the new pitch, the sweeper, they're trying to throw. So it's a lot of force and stress into the forearm. And, you know, the pronators area, and then also with the UCL. And, you know, we're seeing more where these guys are kind of breaking down. You know, we're trying to maintain this, you know, and control it. You know, I think there's a good thing about it. There's some good to it. And I think it's a gradual build. You know, you hear about the guys also, you know, with, you know, training weighted balls. You know what I mean? I think there's some good to that. But sometimes you look at things, is it for everyone? Or do you see like, okay, this is a gradual build, you know, this is a learning system. Because some of these guys, you know, there's off seasons, they go to their own training facilities, are training with their own, you know, personal trainers and strength coaches for that matter. You know, some have their own hitting coach, some have their own pitching coach. It's, you know, because they can afford it. And then they have their system. And some guys can't, and some guys will just do things on their own. And sometimes those are the ones that kind of break down, or maybe it's the volume, you know. I think at the end of the day, like all the stuff we look at, you know, we talk about this, you know, it's, you know, we try to put these guys in the best environments possible, you know, even from a nutrition standpoint. You know, they eat really well, you know, they have all the resources for them. And I think the critical part here is recovery, you know, and with sleep and whatnot. But these guys, as you know, these games are, you know, played it late. There's no clock.
Yeah.
Sometimes going to extra innings. You know, there's a lot of factors take place. You know, a lot of guys do it too. You know, either pre-workout type, you know, supplement. Some, you know, drink a Red Bull, whatever, coffee, caffeine.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are young, you know, once again, you can't forget, right? At the end of the day, they're still young guys and they grew up gaming, you know, and they'll game at night, you know, and then you leave, you know, a ballpark here at night, and then you jump onto a plane and you go into another city or a different time zone, you know, now you're playing with your sleep rhythm and never mind, like, you know, it's challenging enough for us and we're not playing. Right. And we try to manage that so we can get kind of fatigued and tired. And but at the end of the day, that's the critical part. I think it's the recovery, rest with this. And and that's where I think a lot of the focus has to take place is there, you know, and with nutrition. But, you know, getting back to your question, and I know this is all part of it, is that, you know, we work well together. You know, all those parties, you know, that's the whole thing. I think that's what their goal is. Their goal is because they have hired more internal people from the analytical side of things. You know, they're looking at everything, you know, how these guys, stand in the box and how they're swinging, their arm slot, everything's based off, you know, their trajectory and all those type of things, you know, in pitching. And it's amazing. They'll look at these little things and then over, you know, if these guys are fatiguing, they'll notice like, you know, their arm slot's dropped or whatever it is. It's pretty impressive. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of cameras, believe it or not, that we're probably not aware of, and that's taking place.
Like, what's 3D motion capture look like? Is that something you guys look at only practice? Is that something you have game related? You can use MLB how it. Like, so I know that's a big factor on figuring out how the motion, you know, as far as biomechanics and, you know.
Like motion analysis type stuff. So we do have our sports science folks to look at that. And that's what I was saying earlier. That's what they'll do. They'll break down, a game or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Or if they have a simulation type pitching for that matter. Yeah. And they look at their mechanics. So they look from like spring training and they'll gauge it, you know, whenever midway and where they are currently and just to see if what are the changes, you know? Yeah.
That's good. Like
that's what they try to track, because then if it indicates where this person or this athlete, this player is complaining, like, you know, my shoulder's sore, my lat's sore, my elbow, you know, like then that becomes the Y factor too, right? And then they'll look at that and they'll say, look, his slot's changing or whatever it may be.
Yeah. So it allows you guys to be able to pick up, you know, the little nuances you wouldn't pick up with the naked eye unless you were,
right,
you know, seeing that stuff all the time. And I think, you know, I end up going back and getting a second master's in sports science analytics because I wanted to be able to bring that to the athlete I deal with. And I obviously in a high school setting, the amount of money that it costs to work with Vault or work with Indoc or any of those companies, it's super expensive. So my big thing was working on sleep science. And I think there's a lot of validity to the sleep science, the recovery. You made a point talking about travel, late nights, disruption of sleep patterns. And, you know, that I think is the most influential and probably most powerful thing you can do for an athlete or even any patient that we see in clinic. Is that, you know, how are their sleep patterns? Because if you look at someone post-surgical that comes in, say for a shoulder, for instance, had a rotator cuff repair, their sleep is going to be garbage because they can't sleep laying down, they have to sleep sitting up, their sleep is thrown off, the recovery is then negated to the point where you have a lot more difficult recovery over the first 6 weeks. So how do you change that? If I look at your athletes that you're dealing with, the amount of travel you guys have, and especially with basketball and hockey too, it blows my mind that they can go from one, you know, time zone to the other and still remain on point. So that being said, how do you guys measure that? Are you using Whoop? Are you using Oura Ring? Are you using something else to be able to help them be able to see something on a digital dashboard that helps them?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to mention that. So currently our players are not wearing any type of tracking system. So this is kind of a touchy subject too, because sometimes the players, because it kind of catches them too, because if I were to put this on a player, the player's like, well, you know, I got great sleep. Well, why is it showing that you went to bed at 2 a.m?
Right.
You know? So sometimes these guys get a little sensitive with being tracked like that, I guess.
I see that 100%.
Yeah, you know, but it's the bottom line is we're trying to really improve their performance, right? And once again, I think that's the most critical piece that you know, sometimes can get overlooked. Or that needs to get, let's put it this way, that's where the emphasis should go, is the nutrition piece and the sleep piece. Because even on the road or at home for that matter, you know, these guys have access to alcohol. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, not seeing them abuse it, but, you know, it's still, you know, if you're drinking late, obviously it's going to definitely alter your sleep.
Yeah.
And again, they're trying to get a good deep sleep. So there's a lot of factors, you know, and as much as we tell them, you know, you only can, you know, and teach them so much, or you try to teach them as much as you can about that.
Tune into part 2 of Anthony and I's conversation on September the 2nd, when we talk about the challenges of managing sleep patterns for athletes, especially when traveling across time zones. We then discussed tracking systems such as Whoop and Oura Ring to monitor sleep and other metrics. And then we then touch upon the roles of team physicians, the importance of mentorship in the athletic training profession. We then go on to close out talking about advising young professionals to be patient, open-minded, and willing to learn in order to be successful in the athletic training profession. Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. This is your creator and host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X under AJR Sports Sci, or check out our websites at ajrsportscience.podbean.com and at ajrsportscience.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science. Stay tuned for our next episode.